You can tell them in the country, tell them in the town. The miners down in Mingo laid their shovels down. We won't pull another pillow, another ton, or lift another finger till the union we have won. Stand up, boys, let the bosses know. Turn your buckets over, turn your lanterns low. There's fire in our hearts and fire in our soul, but there ain't gonna be no fire in the hole.
This is the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Robert Lindgren, with the Colorado AFL-CIO. On this week's episodes, we're going to hear voices from across the many diverse labor radio and podcast shows. We'll be listening to a weekly digest of labor news called the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Before we begin, railroad workers and supporters in Denver are holding a solidarity rally tomorrow, December 13th, following a government-imposed contract for rail workers. To join us, meet at 7 a.m. at the Smart Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers Union Hall at 1515 West 47th Avenue in Denver. Again, that's 1515 West 47th Avenue in Denver at 7 a.m. tomorrow. We'll be caravanning to a nearby railroad marketplace on Park Avenue West by the BNSF rail yard at 7:45 for the rally. Hope to see you there and dress warm. Now enjoy listening to the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. It's edited and written by Patrick Dixon, produced by Chris Garlick, with social media help from Harold Phillips.
You're listening to the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. This week, we're featuring one of the newest shows in the Labor Radio Podcast Network, The Workers' Mic, which airs weekly on 720 WGN in Illinois. On Sunday, hosts Ken Edwards and Ed Maher discussed one of the more contested subjects within the U.S. labor movement at the moment, the strike that wasn't on America's railroads, and Congress's move to prohibit industrial action, a move that has left many union members at odds with the Biden administration. Ken and Ed break down this complicated dispute and offer their own take.
It's what I call convenient capitalism. That's okay, you know, it's okay for the government to shove a contract down your throat when, you know, you're not going to get your Tickle Me Elmo quickly on Christmas, you know.
Even if you're not a soccer fan, you must have found it hard to miss that the 2022 FIFA World Cup is well underway. And it's remained a frequent topic of discussion on network shows in recent weeks. In the first of two segments today, we'll join Voice of the People on KFGM 101.5 in Missoula, Montana, where soundman Jim and Mark Anderlich evaluate the endemic and widely reported labor violations that were involved in the construction of stadia for the Qatar tournament. They consider a recent article by Anil Valelli in Jacobin magazine titled, "The World Cup Should Make Us Rethink Our Understanding of Human Rights."
Surely no spectator can watch this World Cup without knowing about the desperate plight of migrant workers, the repression of women in everyday life, the crackdowns on press freedom, and freedom to drink beer, by the way, and the...
Oh, no!
I know, that caught your attention, Jim.
Yes.
Next, we go to El Cafecito del Dia, where host Diane Harris is already thinking ahead to the 2026 World Cup, which will be hosted by Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Although there will be no new stadiums this time around, Ashwini Satankar and Valerie Alzaga joined the show to describe the labor movement's advanced organizing efforts to ensure that the North American World Cup represents a square deal for workers, particularly those in the hospitality sector.
We understand that when we're talking about labor rights, we're talking about trade unions, and that really the best protection for workers is to have a union, is to have the right to build a union without repression, is to have those contracts. This is not Qatar in that sense.
That's all coming up on this edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. And remember, if you like what you hear, take a moment to subscribe and share the show. It's what we call sonic solidarity. I'm Chris Garlock, and this is the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Here's the show.
Welcome to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. My name is Ken Edwards. I'm with the Midwest Coalition of Labor. Today, With me, as always, I have Ed Maher from the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. It got a little chilly out.
Yeah, no kidding. It is winter, finally.
Yeah, winter's here.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's okay. We got Christmas lights and Christmas music and all that stuff.
And you know what? For the guys that plow snow, we did you know that we call it snowvertime?
Snowvertime. That's pretty clever. Yeah. I always used to hear people say it snows green in Chicago.
That's pretty good.
You've probably heard about it, Ken. I know you have.
The rail strike, not strike, contract, not
right.
Contract.
This has been a saga that's gone on for months with will they strike, won't they strike, and it looks like it was settled this week, and not a lot of people are very happy about it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it settled. I'd call it shoved down everybody's throat. Now, the background, real quick, 2 seconds, is the rail workers, and I'm going to butcher their name, so I'm not going to bother.
Well, there are more than a dozen unions.
There's
that
a
are
bunch
involved
of different unions,
this.
Right?
Yeah, with a handful of employers that are railroad owners and operators.
And they were negotiating,
right.
And they came up with an agreement, and that agreement was turned down by the membership, which is, you know, not unusual. It happens. And what happens in that case is then you generally go back to the bargaining table and see if you can figure something out. Sometimes it works. Sometimes the employer will lock you out. Sometimes members will strike. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you go to federal mediation. I mean, there's a number of different ways to get at it. But when the workers speak and say, hey, this contract is unfortunately not good enough for us. Oh, and what's the issue? Well, I think the issue in this case was they wanted more sick days.
Right. And the agreement, there was ultimately an agreement that was brokered with the president stepped in because, as we know, the supply chain has a massive impact on the economy. So I think that he charged his labor secretary, Marty Walsh, with, brokering an agreement. And they reached an agreement. I think it did not have sick days in it, which was the sticking point for some of those.
Or maybe it had one sick day or
something like that.
Something like that. And look, you know, there's going to be varying opinions on this, obviously. If you're a full-time employee and you're working 40 hours plus year-round, you generally get paid sick leave. It's just kind of that simple. And
right.
In this case, the workers at these railroads, if I'm getting this right, were saying that we're exhausted, that
right.
working shifts that we don't know when we're working, we're getting called in to come back to work. They're saying that working while you're exhausted, that tired, is actually worse than driving drunk. Like it's literally unsafe. And I think,
and they have to travel a lot. I mean, it's not a thing where you show up to the same spot every day. You're working all along the railroad.
Yeah, for sure. And so I don't think their ask was terrible, right?
I think it was broken down that to give 7 paid sick days, which was what these unions that voted against it wanted, it would have been, I think, less than 2% of the total profits that were generated by these railroads over the course of the past year. The railroads have been exceptionally profitable.
So back to what you said, it's not a big ask, in my humble opinion. But the railroad companies didn't want to do it. They brokered a deal with, like you said, with the Marty Walsh and the Biden administration, and that deal was rejected by the workers. And so,
well, that deal, there were some unions that accepted it. There were a handful of unions that voted it down, which reintroduced the threat. Back when that deal was struck with the Biden administration, the sense was that, okay, we've averted a rail strike that,
right.
The president had said would cost the United States economy around $2 billion a day, slow down the shipping of, drinking water and things that are vital to the economy. So it was in everyone's interest that that this be settled in some way or another, that this be addressed and not just, hands off, let them go on strike for a month until they sort it out kind of thing. The nation has an interest in bringing this to some sort of a settlement is where they were at.
Yeah. And I don't, I understand that concept, but it's what I call convenient capitalism. That's okay. It's okay for the government to shove a contract down your throat when, you're not going to get your Tickle Me Elmo quickly on Christmas, but,
Well, right. The settlement that they were working toward ultimately was voted down or just wasn't accepted by a couple of unions. So at that point,
right.
It's what as the president and, as his administration, what do you do now? And his immediate response was to ask Congress to to push it, to impose it without the sick days. I mean, there was no talk of a compromise.
I think there were some folks that tried to get the sick days put into the contract.
Well, right.
And that was shot down. But when you have people like Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz voting the same way,
right,
you know you have a problem.
For sure. I think that the Biden administration had pushed for the agreement with no sick days. You know, the workers wanted 7, the employers wanted 0. And the thing that has enraged so many folks is that Biden's push was to move forward with 0 sick days. And when it passed the House also passed another bill that included those sick days. It got to the Senate. The bill to impose the act to impose the agreement with no sick days passed, I think, 80-15, with Rand Paul, of course, voting present. Thank you for that, Rand. Always so helpful, Mr. Paul. But the motion to grant the sick days was defeated.
Here we have, you know, literally the government stepping in and saying, you are going to go to work. You're going to go back to work. And I'll tell you something that, you know, take a step back. In Ontario, a couple months ago, the Ontario teachers decided they were going to strike. Mm-hmm. I think either Ontario had a law or passed a law that didn't allow teachers to strike. You know what the teachers did?
Went on strike anyway.
They went on strike anyway. 55,000 of them went on strike. And at the end of the day, refused to go back to work until that law was rescinded. Law was rescinded. They won their strike and they went back to work.
Right.
That is power. That is solidarity.
For sure.
And what I'm telling the railroad workers is to go on strike. I'm not saying to violate the law. I'm just saying don't show up to work. I don't know how you say it either. That's all for us. I'm Ken Edwards. He's Ed Maher. And this is The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Voice of the People Radio by and for the 99%. You are listening to KFGM 101.5 FM, Frenchtown, full-powered Missoula community radio, live streaming on 101.5 KFGM, no punctuation, .org, and available on podcast at anchor.fm/VOP-Montana with Jim Soundman and the one and only Mark Anderlich. So how does the World Cup competition have to do with human rights?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Jim. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a show. And the answer is forthcoming. But for the remainder of our Word of the Week segment, we will follow the November 21st article in Jacobin Magazine by Neil Vallely entitled, "The World Cup Should Make Us Rethink Our Understanding of Human Rights." So there's, how's that for a teaser, Jim?
I love being teased, yeah.
And this is how he starts out. It pays not to think too much about the wider environment surrounding football today, soccer today. Well, I suppose American football could be included in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Excess, greed, ferocious self-interest, and stark inequalities are its guiding principles. Repressive states intoxicated on the rewards of fossil capital now use the sport as a pawn in their geopolitical game, while players market useless and ethically corrupt NFTs to their millions of fans. In the face of this depressing scene, it has been encouraging to see several football associations and many international players take a stand on human rights in the lead up to the World Cup in Qatar. And Qatar is located on the Persian Gulf in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
across the Persian Gulf from Iran. Surely no spectator can watch this World Cup without knowing about the desperate plight of migrant workers, the repression of women in everyday life, the crackdowns on press freedom and freedom to drink beer, by the way, and the...
Oh, no.
I know that caught your attention, Jim.
Yes.
I'm not making fun of the rest of this. And the punishment of LGBTQ people, in Qatar. It's been well documented in the mainstream press, at least most of it. Whether spectators care or not is a different question, of course. But the signs are that most football fans would prefer that the World Cup was not taking place in a country with such a terrible human rights record.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And Qatar is way up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Among other things, I mean, it's a punishable offense to exhibit, you know, gay or lesbian tendencies. It's illegal to engage in a strike or to form a union. Mm-hmm. More like 80% of its population are immigrant workers who have no rights there. In fact, they get their passports taken from them when they get there. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
So it's like the Deep South 150 years ago.
Pretty close. Except Qatar and the other many other Middle Eastern countries have a ton of money, which the U.S. Right. South really didn't have as much.
Actually, they were doing pretty darn well. That's why they thought, oh, well, who needs the Northeast? They're just dragging us down.
But that's a
topic for another show.
Yeah. I'll just say the North had way more resources and money than the South in the Civil War.
They did by 1870.
Thanks, everyone. Please join us every week on Voice of the People Radio by and for the 99%.
Bienvenidos al desvío. Encountering challenges, making decisions, confronting struggles, and understanding the reasons for different positions are but a part of being engaged in our community's ability to discuss and make advances toward a more inclusive and fair society. However, there is no set formula to achieve these objectives. In an era where so much misinformation thrives, como Latinos, tenemos que estar informados. We must be informed. El Desvío, many roads, one destination, presents its listeners with 30 minutes of thought-provoking discussions on the relevant issues we face.
Hello, my name is Diane Harris, and I am Locklow's Communications and Policy Associate.
While the 2022 FIFA World Cup is already underway, so is the preparation for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. We are joined now by Ashwini Sugthankar of the AFL-CIO's International Affairs team, as well as Valerie Alzaga, the Deputy Director of Global Labor Justice. Ashwini has worked to protect labor justice both domestically and globally for over 20 years, as part of Unite Here, the International Commission for Labor Rights, and the Global Labor Justice International Labor Rights Forum.
I just want to say that we've been pretty hard at work, I think, for many months already, really building a pretty smart and well-organized network that led into the creation of a coalition called Dignity 26, which our idea really is to, again, have many voices and have our diversity be also our strength. So a lot of us come from labor. I come from Global Labor Justice International Labor Rights Forum, but we have not only the AFL-CIO and other really important international folks on the labor side, TUC, and actually organizations of athletes as well. But we also have migrant rights organizations. We have community organizations that are going to be pushing and are pushing all of us to really think about community interest agreements and demands. And we also have the supporters, the fans, the organizations that really are also important to raise, because they're from the beginning part of our, let's say, of our strength is to understand that we're all connected. Being in the AFL-CIO, working with Global Labor Justice, really migrants are part of who we are. I don't want to say here are migrants and here are workers. We are the migrants in hospitality with Unite Here, in cleaning, security, and services in SEIU, that, you know what I'm saying? So we're working with the federations, we're working with different trade unions in aviation, in transport, in stadiums and services. And I think that's important, because I want to make sure that we understand that when we're talking about labor rights, we're talking about trade unions, and that really the best protection for workers is to have a union, is to have the right to build a union without repression, is to have those contracts. This is not Qatar in that sense.
Earlier this summer, FIFA announced the 16 different host cities across the three countries, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So how has the work of the labor movement and how has the approach changed since these cities were announced?
The origins of our campaign were about seeing host city selection in the U.S., right? So there were 17 cities in the U.S. competing for originally 10 spots, though we ended up winning 11. And campaign was directed toward looking to the commitments that cities had made with respect to their human rights plans on paper. And now that we're in a different phase, it's not just about making those plans on paper real, but about trying to improve the basic commitments that cities have made. In many cases, those human rights plans were quite weak. And so we continued to push for a real floor across all of those plans. And in some cities, that's going to be especially critical because they are either in right-to-work states or they're in states where state law preempts cities, including Atlanta, Houston, and Dallas, from trying to do anything good and decent, setting living wage policies. So we think it's going to be all the more critical that FIFA step up and make commitments itself to preserve a floor.
I think after the selection, we were happy to see cities that had amazing plans and were really inclusive and engaging stakeholders. And we were actually not very happy about some cities that did not have very robust human rights plans, who had not involved a lot of stakeholders. We have our work cut out, right? In cities where there is not a lot of labor rights or strong unions, we are going to see spaces where exploitation may happen. And so that is upon us to really, as labor movement and as a coalition, Dignity 2026, to really look at those cities where, you know, where we understand the standards, or we may be pushing nationally for standards. Those are spaces where we know maybe the infrastructure and the way in which cities and states run are not as robust as in others when it comes to respecting several labor rights and human rights. I do think that hopefully our dialogue with FIFA and our push to really have some standards are going to be actually having an influence on those cities that don't have, you know, robust labor rights like Atlanta, for example. But at the same time, we know that that's going to be up to us to, just because we have a framework, and let's see if we can get to an actual enforceable framework. That's what we want. Then we need to enforce it. And so it would be those two things we need to think about at a city level. Yeah. The good news is that I think at city levels, we have very strong players all across the country. And hopefully this will be also an opportunity to, again, race issue when there is no trade unions or where there is repression, when workers are trying to raise their voice around any kind of violations, or where athletes or supporters may have issues, or where other kinds of rights are not being upheld. Yeah.
No, that's definitely very helpful. We cannot forget that behind every piece of entertainment are the hundreds of workers that make it possible.
Thank you for listening to El Desvío, Many Roads, One Destination. Our podcast explores the many ways that we activists and trade unionists try to get to the destination of social and economic justice.
That is it for this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, a roundup of highlights from just a few of the more than 150 Labor Radio shows and podcasts that make up the Labor Radio Podcast Network. We've got links to the shows you heard today in the show notes for this podcast. You'll find all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org. And you can also find them, use the hashtag LaborRadioPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly was edited and written this week by Patrick Dixon. I produce the show. Our social media guru, as always, is Mr. Harold Phillips. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Labor Radio Net. Find out more on our website, laborradionetwork.org. For Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this is Chris Garlock. Stay active and stay tuned to your local Labor Radio Podcast show.
This is your host, Robert Lindgren on KGNU. I hope you enjoyed this episode highlighting the diverse labor radio and podcasts you can find. We want to thank the Labor Radio Podcast Network, Chris Garlock, Patrick Dixon, and Harry Phillips. Search for Labor Radio Podcast Weekly wherever you get your podcasts to hear the full show. Listen next week to La Lucha Sigue, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. It's a reminder that there is a rally tomorrow, December 13th, for rail workers and supporters in Denver. It's a solidarity rally following a government-imposed contract for rail workers. To join us, meet at 7 a.m. at the Smart Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers Union Hall at 1515 West 47th Avenue in Denver. Again, that's 1515 West 47th Avenue in Denver at 7 a.m. We'll be caravanning over to a nearby rail yard marketplace on Park Avenue West near the BNSF rail yard at 745 for the rally. We hope to see you there, and remember to dress warm. This has been the Labor Exchange on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Paul and Silas bound in jail, had no money for to go their bail.
Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on, hold on.
Hold on,
hold on,
hold on.
Hold on, keep your eyes on the prize and hold on, hold on.
Paul and Silas begin to shout.
Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on.